Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Bringing a data center online takes more than equipment. It takes precision. Graybar helps customers predict, stage, schedule, deliver, and verify every step of the build with critical products that are available now. From networking and wireless to critical power and testing tools, our teams help you reduce downtime risk and keep projects on track. Speed. Scale. Ready now. Yep. Graybar does that.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and welcome to the 2026 offseason. But we have one more check-in on this past year before we really get to that. On Wednesday, we had the final press conference of the season with Rob Pelinka and JJ Redick. This is something they normally do these days, really in replacement of exit interviews. They're not really doing the exit interviews the way they used to, where players would come and be at the podium for 15 minutes, similar to how they start things, really more here from the leaders of the team. I always try to pay close attention when Pelinka is in front of a mic because we don't get to hear from him as often as we hear from Redick. And I think going into this offseason, as big as it is, getting some insight from him is important. So if you missed that press conference, let's catch you up real quick. I'm going to focus mainly on what Pelinka said. Redick had some interesting things to say as well, but in light of the upcoming offseason, D, I wanted to just sort of focus on what Pelinka said. And so first thing he said in his opening statement was that they're proud of the team, but not satisfied for accomplishing what they did, and that the next step is to deconstruct the season with the coaching staff, not rushing to judgments or conclusions, meaning watch everything that they did, digest, discuss, and decide kind of what to build off of going forward. Gave a couple of organizational updates. They're interviewing for two assistant GM positions. One is going to be on the strategy side, so salary cap and things like that on the pro club standpoint. And then the other is going to be more draft and player development focused, but that was interesting news. They also have been hiring for positions within those departments that they don't announce for. So really beefing up the front office as they said they would. That's exciting. On that front, one of the reasons that they moved the South Bay Lakers to the Coachella Valley is they're going to build a biomechanics and recovery lab at UHTC, and the South Bay team moving out kind of helps create room for that. So there's going to be construction of that going on over the course of the summer. So very exciting about that. Somebody asked about, you know, upcoming free agency, specifically Austin and LeBron. Austin was given a very strong endorsement that, you know, very much sounded, we want to have him back. We expect to have him back. LeBron and Rui, I thought Pelinka parried away those a little bit. The LeBron answer was more, you know, we want to give him time. Of course, we'd love to have him back, but want to give him time to decide if he wants to play. When asked about Rui later, there's a two-part question about Rui's development outside of the shooting that was directed toward Redick. And then the same reporter asked Pelinka if his performance in the playoffs changes the plans with Rui at all. And he sort of parried away the question and focused on Rui's development and things like that caught my ear. Then Pelinka mentioned that he thought the 16-2 run in March right after the Kennard trade and the spacing that Kennard provided along with Rui really opened up how they wanted to play and how Redick wants to play specifically, and was sort of a proof of concept. Now, I don't know if that means Kennard specifically or beyond just like these are the types of guys that we need. And then lastly, he mentioned, you know, a lot of talk about youth and athleticism being a North Star and something that they want to pursue along with depth, D. So that's sort of my recap. D, what were your thoughts on yesterday's presser?
I agree that when Rob talks to assembled media in this public a way, then it's important to listen. He normally does like smaller by invite only stuff after the trade deadline where he might speak to two or three reporters. This is open to everyone. And I think it's a great opportunity for a bunch of people to ask a bunch of questions from a variety of directions. And I thought we got some of that. I would have loved to have heard more in the weeds questions. And if he parries them, he parries them. But I find what you choose to answer versus what you choose to maybe be a little bit less specific on can be telling at times. And so to your point about the Rui thing, I thought the framing was, does this change anything? It sets up this dichotomy that he was probably correct to just sort of shift because you start to reveal something even by acknowledging the premise of the question. So sure. I thought that was deft there. The LeBron stuff is a reiteration of what he said about LeBron basically for the past 2.5 seasons, it feels like, which is once LeBron's gotten to this stage of his career, ages 38, 39, 40, 41, and retirement was seemingly in the window of discussion, Rob has pretty much consistently been like, we'd love to have LeBron. We'd love to have him retire here. Obviously, his decision-making, we honor.
We're going to give him the space to make the decision that he wants to make. Yeah.
There's been versions of this the entire time. There's stuff there that is unsaid that I believe is more truth than what was said. And so we can get into that part of things soon too. The Austin endorsement was great. I would have loved to have heard more pulling at those threads of youth and athleticism. His answering of the question as well about San Antonio and OKC and how I thought that he quickly and correctly identified this as like, they got all those players by losing for multiple years in a row. And that's just not what we do here. It's not a part of our ethos. It's not a part of our plan. And in a lot of ways, don't have that luxury. I thought that that was an interesting framing as well. And it's something that we've talked about some, Pete, both on and off the pod, that tearing something down and being bad is probably the easiest job in the NBA. It's stressful and you have to make the next set of decisions correctly. And if you don't, then you're out of a job. But that initial teardown job, that's the easy part. And then winning the lottery with Victor Wembanyama or getting the second pick with Dylan Harper on board, that's sort of easy too. Like, I applaud them for the Stephen Castle pick and things like that. But the we can't just be bad here and get all of these young players. I thought he was smart to sort of just say that part out loud so that everyone understands we've got to build a team a different way here and we're going to do our best to do it, but it's not that other way. And so I thought that was an important part that I wanted to bring up as well.
Yeah, no, it was revealing to get that point of view. And that's, like you said, something that you and I have talked about that is not in the cards for the Lakers to be bad for multiple years. And the proposed tanking reforms, this is an interesting time in the NBA because they're kind of shutting off that avenue, not all the way, but they're really looking to reduce the degree to which they're like, oh, we're just going to be bad for several straight years. And then we're going to find ourselves in a position of having a championship caliber team.
I should correct the record a little bit here. The Lakers did that for a stretch, and then they turned that into Anthony Davis and the summer that they got LeBron. And so they ended up with multiple lottery picks in a row. It was the longest stretch of non-playoff basketball in the history of the organization. That was basically within the last decade. They traded in their chips, and that ultimately got them Luka. And so I also thought Rob's point about like the hardest part of the job is actually the thing that we were able to already do. And now that doesn't mean the rest of the job is easy, but the hardest part is done. They've got their franchise player who's young enough to project forward as being a difference maker who can carry you both to regular season success and postseason success. And the idea that this summer is a critical one isn't lost on Rob at all. And I thought that he actually laid out some breadcrumbs, Pete, to what they're looking at doing in order to try to build that roster around Luka, not only with the Austin stuff and even to a degree the LeBron stuff, but what was unsaid about Rui, all the other free agents that didn't even get a mention at all, the player option stuff. That's why I was saying we didn't get everything we would have liked. I would have loved to have heard someone ask about the player options that Marcus and Ayton have, or Jackson being a free agent as well, and him basically closing game four. Like, there were more sort of in the weeds questions that I thought could have been asked that would have informed me and stuff that I wanted to hear. But hey, I'm not there. So what can I say?
Let's go to break here. Come back. I want to talk about some of those breadcrumbs.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
So we got this little tidbit I want you to hear from Rob Pelinka talking about the different ways that there are to build and improve this team.
In this sort of double apron CBA, it's almost an effective hard cap. I think having the optionality to roster plan and roster build, there's several ways to do it. There's in the draft. There's through trades where some teams are going to be trying to get off good players in this harsh system. And then there's through free agency. And we do, to your point, have the optionality to look at all those different avenues.
That detail, D, about there being multiple teams that are going to need to kind of get out of money. If you've been listening to this show, we've been talking about that from last summer. And so to get that from Pelinka, that like, no, this was the strategic vision all along, is that whenever Pelinka gets behind a mic, one of the first things that you'll hear him say is, under the punitive nature of the double apron system, .. And we'll continue to make his point that very much reflects, I think, the team's mentality over the last couple of years. It's been like they didn't want to end up in a spot like Milwaukee's in, or a spot like Phoenix was in. Denver is sort of entering this territory as well, where
Boston was in it.
Uh-huh.
Cleveland's in it right now.
That's right. All these teams find themselves in places where if you keep chasing the next player and trying to throw assets at that to improve your team short term, eventually the bill is going to come. And the more you do that and the longer you do that for, the more the bill is going to be. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on what Pelinka said there, D. That's a rare bit of sort of specifics about like, hey, we find ourselves with money in a buyer's market in a league where a lot of people have to get rid of players that are pretty good.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that he said that, even if it was in a very sort of bite-sized quote. And look, anyone who understands how the cap works and how cap space works knows that you don't just use cap space to sign free agents. You can use it to execute trades. You can use it as a dumping ground for bad salary in order to pick up bad players, but that come with other assets like draft picks. Oklahoma City did that for a long time as well. You can use it to try to get good players at sort of a discounted price, because if those teams are dealing with financial hardship, you can try to scoop up those sorts of players. I think that's the avenue that Rob is hoping to tap into. I'll be interested to see if that part of the optionality question, right, which I think is what led to his answer, comes to fruition. But it was interesting. There's two layers to the onion that I'd love to kick back to you. The first is this idea that I think has been circulating for a long time, which is, how many friends does Rob have around the league, and the willingness of teams to make deals with the Lakers where they are advantageous to the Lakers. And the second is, there's a presumptive nature of cap space. Now, he didn't bring it up that way necessarily, like, we're going to have all this cap space. But the implication is that you don't operate with this as an option unless you're a cap space team. And there's inferred transactions or decisions that happen to make the Lakers a cap space team. We'll get into this when we do full-on off-season pods, but the Lakers are projected to have a ton of cap space if, and this if is in capital letters, they renounce the rights to multiple free agents that would come off of their books. LeBron is one of those players. Rui is one of those players. Jackson is one of those players. Those are just the Lakers' own free agents that were in their rotation to close the season. And if the Lakers don't renounce those rights, they actually don't have cap space. And so it's an interesting sort of thing that went unsaid that we've been talking about a fair amount, but there is that question of what decisions are the Lakers going to make on their own players, because that's going to impact that cap space idea to begin with. So take either one of those as whatever, which one interests you more.
Yeah, so on the does Rob Pelinka have friends around the NBA front? I think that's mostly a Twitter thing. I don't think that's really, like, he pulls off trades every year. He's been our GM for like 8 years and has made a whole bunch of trades. Like, I don't think that's a thing. On the front of the order of operations, fascinating topic that I want to get into more in depth as we really start our offseason pods. We're really going to start tomorrow. I think this is going to be the first like major big picture. Okay. And then we're going to hit all of that really hard. But LeBron's cap hold of in and of itself, like, takes up all of the Lakers cap space. And so the order in which things need to happen with Austin and Jackson, I think they will keep their cap holds on the book. So with Austin, definitely, right? Because what Austin's cap hold is going to be less than what he's going to end up making. Jackson's cap hold, I've seen conflicting numbers. I'll try to get clarity, either $4.5 million or $6.3 million, which is around the range of what I think he'll get paid annual salary anyway. But if it's the lower number, then I think that there's a decent chance they keep him on the books. If it's higher, who knows, right? But LeBron and Rui's cap hold is 27.4, which I think is more than he's going to get. And so they would have to sign first if they're going to come back to the Lakers to free up the rest of the money from a cap space type of perspective. Now, even if they renounce them, the Lakers can re-sign them, but it has to be signing them into that cap space or using the room MLE, which would be $9.1 million. Neither LeBron nor Rui. I mean, who knows what happens with LeBron from a, I'm going to take a pay cut standpoint, right? But I'd be shocked if either of them were on that. And so the timing in which things have to happen, it makes things very interesting, D. And so, yeah, on the LeBron front, we got our latest entry in the Energy Vampire Chronicles from Rich Paul, Dave McMenamin today, and we'll see how all of that ends up playing out. But yeah, D, what are your thoughts on just kind of the order things that need to happen in?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the idea of order of operations, particularly in relation to LeBron. I think what you said about Rui is correct. That if the Lakers are going to keep Rui, he's going to be signed before the Lakers use their cap space. LeBron, I'm not as sure, just because I don't know what he's going to play for in terms of his salary. And I actually don't know if it behooves the Lakers to make his decision-making be something that drives their decision-making with how they're going to move forward.
They can't wait for him, because the point there is that, like, they would have to come to terms with LeBron, so LeBron would have to make a decision before they could do anything else. There's no way they're going to go that route with it.
I don't envision that happening at all, actually. And so one of the reasons why I'm saying it would not surprise me if the Lakers renounced LeBron's rights. And he either then used whatever cap space was left over, if there was cap space, or he signs for one of the exceptions. The Lakers are going to have the room exception. They'll also have the veteran minimum exception, which when we talk about LeBron later, we'll talk about the viability of that. Rob sort of throwing the idea out there that, look, other teams are going to want to get off good players because this CBA is so punitive towards the high spending teams. I don't think he's wrong with that at all. In fact, I think he's very much correct, and that the salary cap projections for next year were already skewed down. They weren't skewed down by a lot. It was only like a couple of million dollars or $1.5 million. But that supposed natural, easy 10% growth that was going to come every year based off of the new TV deal, that has already taken a minor hit. It wasn't 10% for next year. It's going to be like 8.5% or 9%. That matters. One of the things that we've talked about both on the pod and off, what happens when you sign a bad deal? What happens when you have more than one bad deal on your roster? And how does that impact your ability to team build? And one thing that I will say is that when you become a cap space team, the likelihood of you potentially having to make a bad deal in order to sign a free agent is higher.
Yeah, these are dangerous waters. Mm-hmm. These are fraught. Right? This is fraught territory. You could make a lot of mistakes possible in this type of realm.
And I'm just very interested to know of what sort of internal value the Lakers place on their own free agents. And then how that impacts what they're able to go out into the actual marketplace with in terms of actual cap space to either chase a potential free agent from another team or say, well, look, we've got X amount of dollars in cap space. You've got player X who makes Y amount of dollars. Your player makes more than the cap space that we have, but we've got contract X and a pick potentially. Do you want to make this swap? Mm-hmm. And then you get a trade exception and we get a good player. Do they want to do that more than once? Mm-hmm. And when we get deeper into our off seasons and discussions and we sort of lay out what the Lakers' assets are and all the moves that they can make with them or what's possible, we'll really be in the weeds with that. But this is where what Rob was saying, there really is optionality for them. But at some point, you have to make a decision.
Yeah.
And at some point, you need a dance partner.
Yep.
And these are the things that the Lakers are going to have to cultivate during the offseason, Pete.
Yeah, having options is great, but you got to end up picking one eventually. And in that spirit, I have a thought exercise for you after the break.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
So D, disregard any salary cap rules or machinations that it would take to acquire these type of players. But in leaving that OKC series, let's say anybody you wanted is coming back to this team. What would they need to add to be champions or become in that class of OKC and San Antonio?
I thought the OKC series revealed the degree to which the Lakers' wings were mostly one-way players and that they skewed more towards defense. I don't think they were as good as they needed to be on defense necessarily, but I thought that their battle and spirit defensively was good enough to like limit SGA in several of the games and sort of impact OKC's offense enough. But the degree to which like Jake LaRavia became unplayable because he wasn't really even looking at the basket and didn't have much offensive utility. That was like, oh man, this guy played 82 games for you and was a key rotation player. And by the time the Lakers were getting eliminated, he was not on the floor at all. The Lakers needing Marcus Smart's offense to the degree that they did because everyone got pushed up a role with Luka out, I thought that that revealed a certain amount of even the shots that Marcus was getting that would have been of the same quality that he would have been getting should Luka had played. And there were plenty of shots like that throughout the OKC series. He just didn't make them. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make them nearly at a high enough rate to be, quote unquote, a two-way player. Now, look, he's trying his ass off defensively and picking up full court and denying and doing all of this stuff. That saps you for sure. But it's just like, okay, well, you're not reliable enough on offense either. The same is true of Vando. These are your three sort of best defensive players. Vando was also the first guy out of the rotation multiple times throughout the regular season. Like, I didn't expect him to have this huge role during the OKC series.
One of the things that Redick brought up in terms of team needs was just shoot pass dribble ability, of which Vando doesn't check really any of those boxes. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why he's one of the first to fall out.
Yeah, and I think that what JJ ended up doing was leaning into his more offensively geared players. He tried to cobble together enough defense through scheme and through switching and, okay, well, we'll keep this guy on the court and that guy on the court, but nothing really works without the shooting and floor spacing, and they needed that at offense. I just think if I could come away with one or two more defensive players who you trust to be like fine on offense during a playoff series, that's a big deal.
Defensive player who's fine on offense describes what I want at the big man position. There's no position where I think that that's more important than that. One of the things that I thought greatly limited the Lakers in this series was the lack of variance that they could run on the defensive end because of the personnel that they have. What you just talked about is one of those components. But at that big man spot, there's nobody that controls how good your defense is or not from a personnel standpoint than that position. And I found myself in that series being like, I wish we had a five that could just stay on the floor and provide a level of like athletic force and strength from a defensive standpoint. I hear so much talk about building around Luka and the importance of a lob threat, which is important. Don't get me wrong. I just prioritize the rim protection, the rebounding. One of the moments in the series that sticks with me is Redick sitting down being flabbergasted that DA can't get a rebound and be like, I can't play him. You know, that somebody who can continue after having a good first round, right, with DA, but that series was too fast for him. So I landed on the same spot as that starting five spot, and I want a second Marcus. I would love to keep Marcus. I think we should absolutely keep him around. I don't want to have to play him or play somebody at a totally different position like Rui or even Kennard. Like, Kennard's a guard, but him and Marcus couldn't be any more different as players. That I would just love to have a second Marcus where if Marcus can't close a game, if he's not doing well on offense, right, because the drop-off after that is so steep that I think if we just had one more player that doesn't have to be super high paid, but can sort of replicate what he does and is a similar class, I think between that and the starting five spot, those are the two spots that I mainly go to. And if LeBron's gone, you need a legit second guy. I think there's a decent chance we end this offseason with Austin as our second best offensive player. And I'm not going to believe a team like that can win a championship. I don't think that the team building is over at that point, if that's what the build ends up being, D. But those are the three places for me.
Yeah, I think a second Marcus is an interesting idea, and it's a thread that we'll pull at over the course of the offseason. In terms of archetype, I agree with you. I actually think a defensive guard who is good enough on offense, but his offensive utility is more than just being a shooter, that's a great player to have flanking both Austin and Luka.
Totally agree with this. To give you an idea of what I'm thinking on that Marcus spot is, I agree that that person needs to be different than Marcus while filling a similar position. So a player that I expect to get like under $10 million that I think plays this role and could do that would be like Kelly Oubre, for example, as a long athletic, because Marcus is not that fast, right? He's not that athletic. He's a different style of player.
Yeah. And the player that I think you're describing there and the player that I would lean towards more as well is a wing-sized player. Marcus defends wings by being a lower center of gravity, fire hydrant, staying connected player. Kelly Oubre defends wings by being wing-sized, right? And being just as athletic or more athletic than many of the people who he has to defend. Needing a guy of that archetype is super important. It's one of the reasons why I think a lot of the fan base fell in love with like the idea of Herb Jones during mm-hmm. the run up to the trade deadline. So it's like, well, no, that guy's 6'7", 6'8". He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He can hit the occasional three. Does he have guard skills? Not necessarily, but he can attack a closeout sometimes and do this, mm-hmm. this, that, and the other. But in reality, it's just like, this guy can guard shooting guards. He can guard small forwards and small ball lineups. He might even be able to guard certain power forwards. And the Lakers didn't have that player on their roster at all, except for like Vando or LeBron. Vando's very limited offensively, and LeBron is the oldest player in the league, right? And so you shouldn't be asking him to do that. And the strides that Rui made in terms of being able to defend some of those players, I give him credit for, but that's not what he's good at. It's like not why you pay him. You pay mm-hmm. him because he shoots 40% on threes.
That's right. Yeah, and do the best you can on the other end and be the greatest shooter in playoff history, and we'll find a role for you. But that's not the job, right? The same job that you're describing.
I want to get back to the point you made about center, too. One of the things that stood out to me was Jackson's explosiveness and finishing with force and power around the basket was dynamic in a way where even against a team like OKC, when he really got a runway, it was impactful. He did not look out of place. And the thing I thought when watching the difference between Jackson and Ayton was, man, Ayton's a much more like physically strong physical presence, but he doesn't have nearly the same athletic pop mm-mm. or desire to play through contact the way that Jackson does. But Jackson, because of his physical frame, even if he is okay trying to play through contact, he's getting knocked off his spot too consistently. Yeah. To be like, well, I can rely on you against everyone.
That's why he's a backup, D, is because of that frame. Yeah.
And so one of the things I found myself longing for was a player like Ayton, who I don't want to use words like toughness or whatever, but it's just a more like in the mud sort of player. Now, I thought Ayton's ability to be a skillful finisher and all of this other stuff mattered a ton during the regular season and was super helpful. But even against Houston, I thought in the games that the Lakers lost, him like not being able to secure a rebound mm-hmm. or like just being like, okay, the contact here seems to be bothering him some, that mattered. And against OKC, Hartenstein was basically just playing bumper cars with him. He was just like, I'm going to seek out Ayton's body. I'm going to run into him and I'm going to try to knock him off of his spot. And if I don't get the rebound, that's fine. The other athletes on my team are going to go and chase the ball down. They were just better athletes than the guys in front of them, quicker, in some cases stronger. And it's like, okay, well, they're winning this, right? And then with Chet, it was like length and everything else. And I was just like, man, I get Ayton is a good player. He is. He's a good player, but he seemed outclassed by what OKC mm-hmm. had to offer in these very specific ways. And it was those specific ways that made him less than for this series.
That's why he was the major red flag to me in this series in terms of I don't think he could do that going forward. With Marcus, I would love to have somebody else who could play, but I do think that having Luka back at the very least would push him into a better role. But I do have questions for sure. And on that front, right, we were talking about the taller, rangier wing, Oubre Jones type of player. AJ Mitchell and when he played Jared McCain were two in a long line of small guards that we could not defend over the course of this season. And so while we might yearn for those tall, long-armed guys with 7'1" wingspans and all of that, Lakers are going to have to be able to defend those smaller guards, especially if you look not just at OKC, but also at San Antonio. They've got a lot of guys who could put the ball on the deck and go to the basket. And so just being able to defend at that point of attack, I think all the different archetypes, I think, is super important.
I think one of the things that stood out to us both this year when talking about the team was that the Lakers, whether through purposeful team building or by happenstance, they ended up being a physically strong team. Jackson, and then after the trade, Kennard. And Austin's like this too, but like Ayton, LeBron, Laravia, Marcus, even like Rui. I thought the Lakers found themselves with a strength advantage in a lot of situations, but at a speed deficit 100%. Over and over and over again. And yeah. I think resetting some of the balance in that way is going to be important, that it can't mm-hmm. just be like, oh, well, we're strong and we'll do this and we'll do that. It's just like, if you don't have the quickness part covered, they're going to continue to get beat by the OKCs and San Antonio's,
because right.
those guys have the ability to play fast. They have the ability to zip around, and you can cut off athleticism and quickness with strength, but the entire game cannot be played in a phone booth. Like,
no.
You're not going to be able to beat every opponent that way.
That's right. Yeah, Lakers were a difficult team to go through, but a little easier to go around. All right, we'll wrap up here and really start getting into the offseason. So until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it!
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tap to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.